Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, conservatives. Welcome to another week of Weekly Conservative Talk. We're going to slice them and dice them. We're going to talk about the events of the day. And so let's get right into it. Everybody who has been paying attention has heard about the Rod Blagojevich, governor of Illinois, trial. Indicted on 24 counts. Prosecution tried to prove their case. He was convicted on one count out of 24. That count was a count of lying to federal authorities. Apparently, he told an untruth to those folks that were questioning him. And he got convicted on that. 12, not nothing, you're out of here. That's a felony, by the way. What you may not know is this. On the remaining 23 counts, 11 of the jurors believed that the prosecution had made its case, that he was in fact guilty of that. There was a lone holdout. Now, I would very much dearly love to know who that holdout was. I would like to know if that holdout was part of the Democratic Party. I would like to know what it was that would take to convince them that Rod was guilty of those other 23 counts. Here's my guess. My guess is there was no way to prove to that individual juror's satisfaction that he was guilty. That no matter what the proof was that was presented, they would have voted no. They would have voted not guilty. They would have said, you have not proved your case to me. And I think that's an absolute travesty to justice. First off, on the one count that he was convicted on, lying to a federal official. Why in the world is that a crime? I mean, police officers, federal, state, local, can lie to you. That's absolutely allowed. Court cases to prove that one. They can say, oh, yeah, right. No, we got somebody over here who's going to swear and testify that you were guilty and that you did this and you did that. All the time while they have nothing. But you cannot lie to them. Now, that just does not seem to me like a very good state of affairs. I like symmetry. When I was a banker and I looked at contracts that the bank signed with various vendors, what I looked for was symmetry. They could sue me, I could sue them. They could do this, I could do that. What I wanted was an equal opportunity. If something was wrong with their product, whatever that product might have been, I wanted an opportunity to be able to say, hey, folks, you screwed up. You either, one, owe us money, or two, you need to correct the situation. One or the other. What I specifically looked for was those instances where they retained all the rights to either sue or to discontinue their product or to do whatever without giving me a concomitant opportunity to either, one, get out of the contract or, two, sue them or, three, require that they provide the product that they said they were going to do. So I don't understand how come lying to a federal official ought to be a crime. As far as I'm concerned, they could have gotten by with 23 counts and left that one out. But they didn't. And so Rod's convicted of a felony. Maximum 5 years in prison, $250,000 fine, I think. Very unlikely that he's going to get anything close to that. May get a year, may get two. Doubt if there's going to be a fine. If it is, it's going to be very small. Slap on the wrist, and away he goes. And that just isn't right. I mean, I'm sorry. The guy was going to sell a Senate seat. He was going to sell a seat that theoretically represented all of Illinois. And that's all he gets. And to me, that just seems like, you know what, this isn't right, and we need to not do that. The good news is this. Apparently, the prosecutor is going to retry him on those other 23 counts. Now, maybe so, maybe not, I don't know. We'll find out. Saw a tweet earlier today that said, yeah, well, probably what's going to happen is the prosecutor is going to say, if you don't appeal this conviction, we won't retry you on the other grounds. And I'm saying, man, if that was a deal that was offered to me, I'd jump on that in a heartbeat. There just would not be any question in my mind that that's exactly what I'm going to do, because you know that Chicago judge is not going to throw the book at him, not in any way, shape, or form. So, Rod's convicted. We'll see where it all goes from there. So, let's segue from that into the mosque situation. I don't know how many of you people follow Park 51. That's apparently the Twitter account of the people that are looking to put that particular project together. It was kind of interesting to me that Park 51 said earlier today, again on Twitter, that, oh gosh, they were really sorry if they had offended anybody. They were going to redo their new media personnel and get a do-over. I tweeted back to them, folks, this wasn't a matter of your personnel. This is a matter of where you wanted to place that mosque. Now, before we go any further, let's make it really clear. Nobody is saying they can't, must not build a mosque. Their property, they can do what they want with it, subject to rule and regulation. And that is the heart, well, actually, that is a part of the First Amendment. Nobody's saying they can't do it. Everybody that I have heard is saying they ought not to do it. If the object is to build bridges, to promote healing, and to provide a better understanding of Islam, when you look at the polls and you see 70% of the American public is dead set against this, you have to wonder what kind of healing, what kind of harmony, what kind of building bridges is going to occur here? And the answer is none. I don't know if it's true. I know that my particular feeling is this. This is a victory mosque. It's named after a mosque in Spain that was built to commemorate and to stand for all time their victory over Spain when that occurred. That's what it was for. It was not to build bridges. It was not to promote a better understanding of Islam. It was not to promote harmony. It wasn't even to promote a greater understanding of Islam. It was to say, we whipped your butts, and here's the proof. Well, you know what? They can take that and shove it. I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, it ought not to be built. Now, there's some talk that, oh, well, they aren't going to get any union trade people to work on it. Well, yeah, but my guess is there's probably a whole lot of Islamists that would be happy to show up and build that. And here's my answer to that. Civil disobedience. Show up there during the day, dead of night, and spray pig's blood all over that thing. Let them get it about halfway up, and then just spray pig's blood all over it. Spray it in the foundation, spray it on the framework, spray it everywhere. And then let them try and clean it up. I mean, that just fries me. We're talking about someone who wants to build something to build bridges and to promote understanding. And they have absolutely no idea, none whatsoever, of what they are doing to all the rest of us. Nothing. It's like they don't have a clue. They can't even buy a clue. And yet, they decide that, oh yeah, we want to go on. So, if that's the case, then we ought to exercise our First Amendment rights, which is freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of all of those things, and say, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that here. Now, you want to take that to where your muezzins are not able to be heard from ground zero, that's fine. Go right ahead, owner. Doesn't make a bit of difference. But you do not build that on hallowed ground. That just doesn't make it. Not for me. Another argument that has been brought up in regard to that is that, well, gosh, there are stores that sell XXX rated DVDs, there's liquor stores, there's this kind of store, there's that kind of store, all within close proximity to this. And my answer to that is this. One, they were there before 9/11, 2001. And they didn't fly airplanes into the World Trade Center. And they did not kill almost 3,000 people. So their argument falls a little flat with me. I mean, I don't care if those stores are there. If they're there, they're there. And they got a right to be there. But they did not kill. Oh, they did not murder all of those people. And because they didn't, then they are perfectly legitimate. Now, maybe I don't like what they sell. Maybe, I don't know, maybe anything. But the point isn't whether you like it or not. The point is it a decision that is congruent with what your stated aims are? Now, I would guess that the stated aims of any and all of those stores is to make a profit. And I've got zero problem with that. If they've got a market for whatever it is that they're selling, that's fine, have at it. And if they don't have a market for it, they're going to go under. I mean, it's that simple. They aren't going to have a customer base, and without that customer base, then they are not going to be able to make any money. But a mosque is a different proposition. A mosque is an in-your-face, we won, this is our victory, and we're going to celebrate it. And I'm saying, nope, I'm sorry, you're not going to do that. Not a bit of that. And in conjunction with that mosque, two blocks away from Ground Zero. Burlington Coat Factory is the building that apparently they purchased. Did you know that there was a Greek Orthodox church even closer to Ground Zero? And in fact, it was so close that it was destroyed because the World Trade Center fell down on it. That was 9/11/2001. And that church has not been rebuilt. Not because the congregation of that church, and the Greek Orthodox Church, not because that congregation didn't want to rebuild it. No, no. It's because the New York Port Authority and the state of New York are giving them grief. Now, apparently, the first offer that was made was $40 million and they would relocate them, help them rebuild. Second offer was $20 million and they would purchase the understory, the area below the church, as some kind of a, I don't know, subway, busway, tunnels, something, and that the New York Port Authority would put in a blast-proof floor above whatever it was that they purchased. And now the New York Port Authority won't even talk to them, won't negotiate, won't do anything, and that church is not rebuilt. Now, how is it that you have that kind of sensitivity on the part of the state of New York and the New York Port Authority in regards to a mosque, but you don't have that same sense of concern, of wanting to work with, of wanting to get the project done in regards to the Greek Orthodox Church? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that answer to that is. What I do know is this. The mosque gets fast-tracked, gets things waived. The Greek Orthodox Church gets zip. Nothing. Nada. Not a thing. And it causes me to wonder. It causes me to wonder about, is there an agenda there? I mean, is there something about this Greek Orthodox Church that says, oh my God, we certainly can't have that on our sacred ground? On a little bit lighter note, I would give you this in regard to this whole controversy. I am so pleased and even joyous that the liberals have somehow now decided that freedom of religion does not mean freedom from religion, and I am absolutely confident that we will see creches all over the state of New York celebrating Christmas. And people will walk around saying, Merry Christmas. And at Easter time, they will talk about Good Friday and the resurrection. I am so happy that that has happened. I will not, however, hold my breath while that comes true, because I think, in fact, that there is an agenda. I think, in fact, that there are people that decided that they will do whatever they can to make sure that Islam, as one of my friends on Twitter puts it, Muslims, have a better shot at doing what they want to do than anybody else. Might not be true, but that's how I'm seeing the thing right now. So, We can say that. Greek Orthodox Church, nah, we don't think so, and we aren't going to really do anything for you. And, oh, yeah, mosque, whatever you guys want, you just let us know, and we'll just help you right out there. And I'm just not going to be real happy with that one. And that then brings up another subject, and that would be the subject of regulation. Now, we have all run into regulations, and there are regulations that govern everything in our life. How and when you can pump fuel, how and when you can go to a hospital, how and when you can build a structure, how and when, it just anything and everything, there is a regulation. And you know what? They're dreaming up more of them all the time. Last time I heard, there were like about 8,000 regulations a year, new regulations covering new facets of an old subject or even new subjects. And none of them is more central to what we're talking about right now than healthcare. Now, healthcare was passed, and it was passed with a very broad brush. In fact, actually, I don't think Congress, Senate and House, have absolutely any idea what's in that thing. And the reason that they don't is they said, yeah, we're going to pass this, and we're going to leave it all up to the regulators as to how that's going to happen. Now, one of the things that has happened in regard to that, and this has just been in the last week, is that apparently the drug Avastatin is a drug for, I want to say terminal, but that may not be true, but very advanced stage breast cancer. So for the most part, this only affects women. It doesn't matter if it affects everybody or only women or only men. It doesn't matter. Here's the point. It's about $8,000 a month. Now, that's a lot of money for somebody who is very probably going to die. But you know what? That doesn't make a bit of difference. But what is happening now is that, remember the death panels? We got one. Because the FDA is now saying, you know, we think we maybe want to take another look at Avastatin. Avastatin was a fast-track drug, which means that in addition to about $100 million to get it approved, they fast-tracked it. And they found that it works pretty well with a number of cancers, breast cancer being one. Also works with colon cancer, lung cancer, various other cancers. And what they are now saying, and it is the very first time in the history of FDA, that they are looking not only at safety and efficacy, but they are also looking at cost. Now, I don't have a big problem with people that look at cost, but I don't want them anywhere near my health care. I mean, if you want to talk about building bridges and building roads and all that kind of stuff, yeah, that's fine. Sure, look at cost. But not in healthcare. I mean, what's the value of a life? Well, the attorneys, particularly the plaintiff's attorneys, will tell you, well, you can determine that. I mean, that's what the whole basis of our awards are for wrongful deaths and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to treatment, not so much. Now, here's the problem. FDA can pull a usage of a drug. They can say, you know, we re-looked at the data. We don't really think that that's all that great. And so they decertify it for that particular ailment. And you say, well, yeah, but so what? I mean, doctors can prescribe it off-label. They can do that. and that's true, they can. I mean, a doctor can take a drug that is for some other ailment, but that the literature suggests that it's also good for this one, even though it wasn't approved for it and all that kind of stuff. It's off-label. And doctors can do that, but guess what? If doctors do that, Medicare isn't going to pay for it. If Medicare doesn't pay for it, private plans aren't going to pay for it. So all of a sudden, you're out of pocket. Now, if that was a $10 a month drug, okay. Yeah, doc, you know, yeah, sure. To save my life, yeah, I can spend 10 bucks a month. Can I spend $8,000 a month? Well, I suppose if I'm rich enough, I could. But that really doesn't help less affluent people. Less affluent all the way down to poor people. No, no, no. They don't get that. You guys just go ahead and die. Yeah, we got a little blue pill here for you. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of the pain. That just isn't right. Just not right. If a drug is safe and effective, that is all that FDA has to concern itself with. If it's expensive, yeah, well, drugs are. You know why? I mean, you really want to know why drugs are so expensive? Because it takes a minimum of $100 million just to get through the FDA process. And that's after they have gone through a number of different drugs and compounds and formulations of that drug for various things. And you know what? It takes that amount of money for every use that they get it certified for. I mean, my God, I mean, why wouldn't it be expensive if you got to spend that kind of money on it? And you got to get that money back someplace. Now, you aren't going to get it back sending it to Africa or to Canada or to any place else. I mean, they've got controls on drugs, and I am not advocating for controls. That is not the purpose of my comments. The purpose of my comments is to say healthcare bill is ripe for regulation. It's the only way that it's going to be implemented. And those regulations are not designed to keep you and I happy. They are designed to minimize the cost to the federal government and, by extension, to the state governments for Medicaid. Every state has got a little bit different name for it. Here in California, it's Medi-Cal. But every state that uses Medicaid, which is the federal equivalent of Medicare for poor people, gets money for treatment of illnesses amongst the population that is poor, certified to be poor. But if they take that out, if they off-label it, that treatment is no longer available to those people. Now, there's about, well, actually, I guess I'm not recalling the number, so I can't use a number here. There are a number of women that have what appears to be terminal breast cancer. For whatever reason, I didn't catch it in time, caught it, but didn't want to go to the doc. Whatever the reason, doesn't matter. They now have one less tool in the arsenal. Now, take a mom, I don't know, mid-30s, early 40s, whose only hope of prolonging their life is Avastatin. And you say to yourself, what's that worth? What's that extra 6, 8, 9 months? What is that worth to that family, to that mother, to those children? What's it worth? Pick a number out of the hat. Doesn't matter. The point is, they aren't going to have that time. Because other drugs are not as effective at late-stage tumors. So, there is an example of regulation that impacts people, all of us, that is based purely on a cost consideration. And there are multitudes of others. Tracy is often fond of saying, you know, if I were in charge, there's a whole lot of people that would be dead. Actually, she says it a little bit differently than that. She says, if I was in charge, there's a whole lot of people that wouldn't be alive. But anyway, here's the point. We need to, simply as a matter of course, stand up and say, look, there are some regulations that are needed. Absolutely. I mean, I do not want people 400 yards upstream of my water intake in the river peeing into the river. You know, I mean, I just don't want that. I don't want somebody with a failed septic tank system 400 yards up above my water intake blithely flushing their toilet and putting E. coli and various other nasty bugs into my water. So do we need regulation? Yes, we do. Do we need it to the extent that we can say all regulation is good? No. I ain't going there. An example here in California, the environmental regulation that says, oh, I'm sorry, that little 2-inch bait fish is more important than people and farming and growing food. I'm sorry, that's not true. People, farming, growing food is a whole hell of a lot more important to most of us than it is to those people who would like to regulate us to death. Right here in Trinity County, California, we have an influx of people that are growing pot. And you say, yeah, so what? And I'm saying, I don't like it. I think it is just another nose of the camel under the tent flap. And in relationship to that, I see today that a UK doctor is saying, well, now it's time to legalize cocaine. Yeah, okay, good show. That's exactly how this whole legalized pot thing came about. But regardless of how you feel about it, here's the upshot. People are coming here into Trinity County to grow pot. And they're paying stupid amounts of money for leases, for tracts of land. They're converting that land from trees and brush and other habitat into theoretical ag land. They're living on the land to grow the pot. And the problem comes about with them living on the land to grow the pot. Now, if they commuted to work to grow their pot, I don't think anybody would have a big problem with it, other than that it just doesn't really feel right, but nevertheless. But they do. And what do? They crap in the streams and they piss in the streams. They have way substandard living conditions, and they're in violation of a number of county ordinances. And my county right now is trying to figure out a couple of things. One, how far do they go in trying to enforce these regulations? Now, I can tell you, that if I wanted to build a deck at the, on the back of my house, they would enforce those regulations to a T. Unless I didn't tell them about it. But say it's a front porch, so they can see it from the road. They would enforce those regulations to a T. There would be somebody here when I started construction saying, gee, Bill, what are you doing? Not so much those people that are growing pot. So right away you have, this kind of sounds like a little unequal enforcement of the law. But on top of that, my building a deck is a whole lot less harmful to anything than somebody peeing in the creek. Or somebody living under conditions that are absolutely unhealthy. Or that are converting ground on slopes above streams so that all the sediment washes down. I mean, those things in this day and age are not acceptable. Which kind of brings up an interesting concept. When do you actually own your ground and you can do what you want with it? City of Houston, well, actually most of the state of Texas, doesn't have zoning regulations. Now, zoning regulations are a big deal here in California. I mean, they get right down to the gnat's eyebrow as to what you can and cannot do. Houston, Texas doesn't have that. I happen to know that because my youngest brother lives there, or actually lived there. He lives in Dickinson now. But they handled that via covenants that go with the land. So if you owned the land, you could do what you wanted with it as long as you weren't going to, I don't know, put a packing plant in it or whatever. And I've made a few trips back to Houston, and I've always been impressed with how nice the neighborhoods looked, how nice the downtown areas looked. And I'm saying, you know, if they can do that without zoning regulations, as we have here in California, why can't that be put in place in other places? And maybe it is. I mean, I don't know. I happen to know for sure that it happens that way in Houston. I don't know about other places. But I'm saying, boy, my experience here in California is a whole lot different than that. And that is just one of the ways that the government, at whatever level, county, state, federal, doesn't matter, controls you, controls me. They do it, but a couple of different ways. One is by regulation. No, you can't do that. 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 And the other is by laws. Now, I don't know what the total page count is for laws, either here in the state of California or take the U.S. as a whole or whatever. Doesn't matter. What I do know is this. My personal guess is I probably cannot go through a single day without breaking one of those laws. And I'm a law-abiding guy. I mean, I don't go out doing things that are against the law just as a matter of course, just because I can, just because of whatever. I'm basically a law-abiding guy. And yet I know that I probably violate some law someplace here in my town of Hayfork just by getting up out of bed in the morning. And that is a hook. That is the shepherd's crook that wraps around your neck and drags you back. Because if you have broken a law, and if someone wants to enforce that law and prosecute under that law, they can do that. Legally, they can do it. What does that tell you then about what your existence is like law-abiding person, knowing that you cannot be, and knowing that anytime they want, they can reel you in. Ayn Rand talked about that in Atlas Shrugged. And the truth of the matter is this. If a county, a state, the federal government wants you, they can reach out and grab you. Doesn't matter. Doesn't have to be something like Blagojevich. I mean, some silly, stupid little thing which you then have to defend yourself with and hope that a jury of your peers will nullify it. We'll say, you know, doesn't matter if he did that. It isn't worth it. Go away. Not guilty. You'll notice that that was not innocent. That was not guilty. So now you have a record. Not a successful one all the way through to conviction, but nevertheless you have a record. You know what? That prevents you from doing a whole lot of things. So, what we need to do is say, you know what? We can't make that work anymore. We've got to cut back on these regulations. We've got to get rid of them. Not all of them. I am not suggesting that we get rid of all regulation. It's not my point at all. My point is we are excessively regulated, and we need to get rid of those excessive regulations. So, a word to the wise. It starts in your county. You need to be active in your county. You need to know who the district attorney is. You need to know who the sheriff is. If you live in a city, you need to know who the police chief is. And you need to be vocal. When you live in a county, you need to know who the planning director is and who their assistants are. And you need to be showing up at planning commission meetings. And you need to know who your board of supervisors are. You need to know when they are contemplating action. I mean, one of the biggest things is the Uniform Building Code. The Uniform Building Code happens at both the federal and the state level. And your state will have adopted it, and they will probably have adopted it in the last year or two. The current version, which is about 2 years out of date. But it really isn't any better than the one that they got rid of to adopt this one. Not a bit. It doesn't make your building any safer. Doesn't make, I don't know, the school any safer. Doesn't make anything any safer. It's just another way of making you toe the line. So you need to know who those people are, and you need to register your vociferous objection to that. Two more items on my list here. How much time do I got? Oh, I got about 18 minutes, something like that, close to it. Okay. Interesting article today. I did not read the whole thing, but apparently bankruptcies are close to a five-year high. And I really wish Tracy was here because that's kind of her area of expertise. But she's not. So here's what I will say about that. If bankruptcies are near a five-year high, that is a symptom of what we're going through, which is very high unemployment. Last number that I looked at said it was about 22% total. That's not the U1 number. It's not even the U6 number. It is the total number of people that could and should be in the workforce and aren't equals about 22%. At the depth of the depression, we were at 25%. So we've only got about another 3% to go. But that's kind of off the subject. The subject is bankruptcies. So what happens? Well, somebody declares bankruptcy. They may or may not keep their house if they have one. If they have more than one vehicle, that isn't going to work. They only get to keep one. They get to keep some family jewelries and some assets, but for the very most part, They're going to have to turn over any assets that they've got, and their debts are going to be forgiven. Now, what does that mean? Well, if their debts are forgiven, the bank loses, credit card companies lose, your doctor loses, you name it, whomever you owed money to loses, gone. Most of those people are unsecured creditors. Exception to that would be banks that had automobiles for collateral or houses for collateral. Almost all the rest of it is unsecured. Unsecured debtors are the very last in line. If you're unemployed, you probably, one, don't have a lot of assets to begin with. People tend to run through those pretty quickly. And two, there's not a lot of assets to sell off to generate money for any of those unsecured creditors. So they're going to take it in the shorts. Just pure and simple, they take it in the shorts. That impacts their bottom line because that's a direct loss. That's just a dead loss, period. And what does that do in today's environment? Makes them unable to hire somebody else. Now, we went from bankruptcy on an individual's part to the business, who now, because they've got dead losses, aren't really in a position to hire anybody, and anybody that would hire somebody in this environment has got to be absolutely out of their mind. Uncertainty is to regulation, uncertainty is to taxes, uncertainty is to the business environment. There's just a whole ton of uncertainty out there. So you go from bankruptcies that are almost at a five-year high to all of the cascading effects that come down from that. My advice to you is, don't get yourself in that position. If you got credit cards, make sure that you pay that balance off every month. Better yet, don't use it. Pay cash. It's possible to do. It isn't easy, but it's possible to do. Make sure that your asset level is prudent. Do not go out and splurge. Do not go out and say, well, gosh, we got to really be down at the bottom here. I'm going to go out and buy this, that, or the next thing. No, don't think that we've hit the bottom, and you could be in for a pretty rude awakening. Make sure that you know where your next buck is coming from. And you say, well, what do you mean where my next buck is coming from? Well, if you've got a job, for God's sake, do not quit it. I mean, the uncertainty now is, can you hold on to it? Well, if you quit it, you sure didn't hold on to it. And let me tell you, there are not a lot of things out there for you to do at this point. Number two, if you are retired, as am I, make sure that you know that your pension, your retirement plan, your whatever is sound. If it isn't, see what you can do to convert whatever it is that you have to something else. If you're on Social Security, as am I, good luck. Really don't know how much longer that's going to last, but there you go. If you have investments, you're happy with them, okay. I got to tell you, I'm in cash right now. I do not trust the markets. So there you have that. And that takes care of BKs. And now my very last subject. I don't know how many people caught this, but the Los Angeles Times did an article either yesterday or the day before. And that article was on our school systems here in California, more specifically our school system in Los Angeles. And they did a statistical study based on the student test scores. And they correlated that study with teacher performance. So, they knew who the students were, they knew what classes they were in, they knew what teachers they had. And what they discovered was this. There are a number of very good teachers out there. Excellent teachers. Outstanding teachers. There's also a whole bunch of underperforming teachers. Now, the LA Times is now going to be picketed and boycotted by the NEA and the CTA, California Teachers Association, National Education Association. Why? Because they had the temerity, they had the absolute gall to publish a piece that pointed out what everybody else in the business world knows. There are good employees and there are bad employees. And that any business, any endeavor, wants to encourage the good ones and get rid of the bad ones. And the unions don't like that. That upsets their entire apple cart. And in fact, on Cavuto today, there was, via telephone, a union official that was saying, oh gosh, this is a really flawed study. They only had 6,000 students. Oh my God, 6,000 students that they correlated records on. That is a significant number. When you talk about, national polls are typically done with 1,000 people. This was 6,000. When you get in the 10,000 person range, you're going to have a very high degree of confidence in your results. The law of large numbers is not a negotiable item. So 6,000 students is big. And then they took those 6,000 students, they correlated them with their teachers, and discovered, as I told you before, you got good ones and you got bad ones. The good ones are engaged with their students, make their subject matter interesting, and encourage learning. The bad ones present dry material without a lot of interaction with the students, and in general are not encouraging people. Now, here in California, and I suspect in every other state in the union, we spend a ton of money on the school system. A ton of money. And in fact, in California, it's enshrined in our constitution that they're going to get a minimum of 50% of the revenues. Don't you think that we ought to demand some show of quality for that kind of money? If I hire somebody to, dig ditches, whatever it is, I'm going to check and see if their ditch is dug straight and narrow. If I hire somebody to, make shoes, I'm going to check and make sure that those shoes were made accurately on the last and they actually fit a foot. If I hire a neurosurgeon, I damn well want to make sure that he's not some quack that spent the night at, Motel 3 and decided they were a neurosurgeon. Why in the world don't we do that with teachers? I mean, what is it about teachers that says, you know what, they don't have to comply with the laws of supply and demand. They don't have to show that they are competent. They don't have to show via whatever that their students actually learn. They just have to show up. Now, some people love to teach. I'm not one of them, but some people love to teach. I mean, that in fact is their calling. They teach. And they do, by and large, an excellent job. Well, everybody that teaches ought to love to teach, but they don't. And so you have students that are trapped in a classroom with a teacher who doesn't like their job and doesn't like to teach. And if they get a couple of those in a row, they are so far behind the eight ball, unless they are highly motivated. And oftentimes kids aren't. But if those kids are not highly motivated, they're just going to go through the motions, and they aren't really going to learn anything, and that's going to put them further back for the next year. Until finally, they aren't in a position to catch up. I don't mean to pick on any particular race, but I read a story today that said 47% of a particular racial group does not graduate from high school. 47%. Almost half of them. And it makes me want to weep. Where are we and what have we done and why in the world did we do that and why in the world don't we insist, demand better? And the answer is unions. Pure and simple. Unions say, oh no, this is bad. We think the teachers ought to be evaluated by themselves for their own purposes and don't pay any attention to those test scores. And that is not the metric to use. Test scores are the metrics to use. Well, we have to teach to the test. Folks, every teacher teaches to the test. It may be a test of their own devising, but by God, they teach to it. If they didn't teach to it, how in the world do they expect their students to pass? And at least in the hard subjects, that's what you have to do. I mean, 2 and 2 is going to equal 4, and you better teach your students that. You better teach your students that, I don't know, second law of thermodynamics is an accurate thing. You better teach your student, yes, there are nouns, verbs, adverbs, prepositions, all of those kinds of things, and here is how you use them. And if you don't do that, teach to that test, because that's what you're going to test them on, then what in the world are you doing in a classroom? And why do you do that? Okay, I got up on my high horse, and I got to run. Folks, it was really good seeing you, talking to you. Just me, Pammy, Mama Gurkha, Arkansas Traveler, Hippie Chick, if you tuned in, Louisa Ma, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Y'all have a really great evening. Bye now.